How you gonna know what to do if you don't know what time it is? What time it is? What time it is?
Listen up. Listen up. Listen up.
How you gonna know what to do if you don't know what time it is?
Listen up. Listen up. Listen up.
Knowledge is your birthright. Every human being should be gifted with the right to know self and the environment and the universe into which God gave us birth and life.
For us to come out of our mother's wombs and be 20 years old, 30 years old, not able to read. Victims now of where we place our ears. Who do you listen to?
Listen up. Listen up.
How you gonna know what to do if you don't know what time it is?
Listen up. Listen up. Listen up.
Welcome to Listen Up Here, your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community and the next generation. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Good evening, good evening. Hey, tonight we got a fantastic show for you. We're going to kick it off talking to one of our favorite national activists. She's from the Native American and Black community, Sister Queen Yanashtaha Lone Wolf. Hill is going to be joining us for a few minutes tonight to talk to us latest about the Native American March on Washington and the continuing water crisis from Flint to all across the country. We'll have a conversation with her, and then we'll check in with Anthony Pena and Shaquia McKenzie, two educators, to talk about the latest of the Baltimore City Public School drama and how it impacts charter and public schools. We'll have that conversation. And then later on, we check in, you get another installment of our new segment, For Women, By Women, with Neera Muhammad of I Call Her Queen. So we'll talk to her and see what she's got good for us today. And then, of course, I got something for you for the official What's Good in the Hood Street Report. So stay tuned. All of that on tonight's edition of Listen Up. Here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. The voice of the community, and of course, the next generation. Young Nation, let's go.
Yeah. I was made in America, land of the free, home of the brave. And right up under your nose, you might see a sex slave being traded. And we'll do anything for the money. Boy, mama might sell her babies. Sell porn, sell pills, anything to pay the bills, anything to bring that paper. Gotta scratch that itch, gotta scratch them ticks. Ain't rich, but I might be. And I'ma shoot these flicks, I'ma turn these tricks, anything for a slight fee. Yeah, made in America. Mama told me that I belong here. Had to earn our stripes, had to learn our rights, had to fight for a home here. But I wouldn't know a thing about that. All I know is drugs and rap. I probably could have been some kind of doctor.
All right, peace and welcome back to Listen Up. Here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. The voice of the community and, of course, the next generation. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. We're going to kick it off talking to one of our favorite sisters. I'm always happy to talk to my sister because she travels all over the country. And when I have a chance to kind of get some of the latest things that have been happening on the front lines, on the ground, it's always a great report. So I want to welcome back to Listen Up here on WEAA, our very own sister, Sister Queen Yanashtaha. Peace and blessings, Queen. How are you?
Peace, Farazi. How are you? I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. It's always good to hear your voice. Let's kick it off. There was a major gathering last week that was really like a continuation of what we've been seeing all across the country with the great and tremendous support for Standing Rock. But there was, we had various tribes and various, you know, organizers from the Native American community, from various communities that descended on Washington for the Native American March on Washington. Talk to us about what happened on last week in D.C.
You know, it was such a beautiful, it was like a reunion of Standing Rock. And so the Indigenous Environmental Network, the Standing Rock tribe sponsored, as well as so many other organizations, Indigenous Women's Rise organization, as well as Native Giving, that is a local Indigenous organizers out of D.C. And so what they did was they went ahead and put a call to action for us to come to Washington, D.C., for everyone just to make a stand, not just on the Dakota Access, against the Dakota Access Pipeline, but also the Keystone, and as well as all the many other pipelines that is being built as we speak through indigenous lands, through Texas and Florida, and as well as other tribal communities. And so it was a stand. And so it started off with an encampment, a teepee encampment on the National Mall. And anyone could just, you know, you could go on media, social media, put in hashtag Native Nations Rise or Native Nations March. You have seen the pictures of all of the teepees that was on the National Mall. So it was basically these teepees, this encampment was more so we are here, we will not be ignored and any longer, and really a stand to this, to the corporations and the government. And so when we marched, it was great. A lot of celebrities came, Taboo from Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah, I saw that,
And as well as many different, Talib Kweli was there, so shout out to Talib, and so many other celebrities that actors, and they end up coming, and I can't remember all the names, but it was really great to see everyone that was just coming to support, whether they were Native or not Native. And so we did march, and we shut down Washington, D.C., the streets of Washington, D.C. We did go in front of the Trump Hotel and set up a teepee right in front of the Trump Hotel.
Nice.
To basically let him know that we will not be ignored. And so we end up doing a rally right in front of the White House.
So let me ask, Sister Queen, I mean, if we look at, because for those who don't, you know, we've been talking about this pipeline, this North Dakota Access Pipeline for a while. It's, I mean, it's certainly been part of, it just got into national news a few months ago, but it's been a longstanding issue. What has been the latest in terms of policy legislation? Because I know that President Obama had pretty much said, look, we're going to stop the construction. What's the latest now with President Trump in office? What's the latest with this? Is there going to be a continuation of the construction of this pipeline, or, you know, what's been going on with that?
Well, really, we knew that Trump saying that it was going to be rerouted was a pacify, to pacify us, to kind of get us home for the holidays.
Okay.
But a lot of people did not leave Standing Rock. And so there was, so when Trump came in office, well, even with Obama saying it's going to be rerouted, the workers never stopped working. They were still building that pipeline.
Right on the sacred ground.
Right on the sacred ground. So they never cared. That was the major part. So when every single time in D.C. they were saying, no construction, don't do anything, they were still working. And that was the reason why they retaliated with so many different tactics of water cannons and rubber bullets and things like that. But they are building this pipeline, and Donald Trump went ahead and did an executive action to have the Dakota Access Pipeline to be built through this, through the treaty land, as well as the Keystone XL, which will be along the Mississippi River, as well as the money that was supposed to come to Flint, the $100 million that Obama ended up, you know, saying, let's get these pipes fixed in Flint. Trump did an executive action for that money to be cut, so the people of Flint will not have any water pipes. So there is a war on our water that Donald Trump is doing for our on our water source, as well as the way that we receive our water through the water pipes. And so in Standing Rock, the National Guard did come in and they did evacuate. They end up evacuating and doing a raid on the camp, the Osheti Shakowi, or later it was named the Osheti Oyate, which is the people's camp. And so they ended up doing a raid. So those camps are no more right now. And the chairman of the tribe and the Standing Rock Tribal Council has basically said, we're gonna continue fighting this fight in court. We're gonna continue fighting this through defunding, divesting, and but mostly in court. So they're really in need of legal support. They're in not just those that know international law and those that know tribal Indian law, which is very key in regards to winning this case.
Wow.
This lawsuit. Mm-hmm.
This is again another long-standing issue, but I'm really happy to hear that folks are like yourself and many others who've been on the ground being very consistent, making sure that this situation is not forgotten. You spoke about Flint and the water crisis, and I want to give you a few moments, Queen, for you to update us about the upcoming first annual Water is Life Expo that you and your team are organizing in regards to Flint, because for many people, they may not know Flint still does not have clean water.
They do not have clean water, and because Trump said no on fixing these pipes, there has been so much propaganda that has been coming out saying the water is clean. Well, how is the water clean when we already knew that those pipes were contaminated? So this, the Water is Life Expo is to unite everyone. You know that and we talked about this before, in Baltimore, there is lead that is coming out of a lot of people's, especially in oppressive poor communities, areas in Baltimore that's lead, high risk of lead in the water. Same thing in Newark. There is young people that can't even wash their hands in the public schools in Newark. And so this is a huge problem. And this expo is to be able to educate, empower, unite. And after that, everyone's going to leave this expo with marching orders. What do we do in our own community, in our own backyard, for us to be able to win this war on our water? How do we get our local government to, instead of investing it in other areas, but invest it into fixing and rebuilding the local water pipes? Because the water infrastructure all across the United States is at least about 100 years old, and the newest was built in the 1930s. So these water pipes really need to get rebuilt all the way across the board, and they continue to put a Band-Aid on a huge wound. And the more and more they continue to not be educated, the local politicians, you know, the local government, then we are going to continuously have these filtration systems coming through to our water into these pipes that are still bad water. And so this Water is Life Expo is going to be March 24th through the 26th. We're uniting Standing Rock. We have three buses coming in from Standing Rock, as well as we are uniting with Flint. And so we're raising money for water filtration systems. These are reverse osmosis water filtration systems. And so we're raising money for water filtration systems that take lead out of their water. So which is a really, really great thing. With Hip Hop for Flint, which you was a part of, Faraji.
Yes.
And because of your work and your promotions and all of the other 42 cities that was involved, there was currently 200 homes that have water filtration systems. So I just wanted to, you know, salute to you for what you did in Baltimore. And so because of that, we have 200 homes in Flint. So we want to continue to get more people to have water filtration systems, especially the fact that Trump said, no, he's not fixing these pipes. So it's going to take us to be able to do this. So we have a concert, we have workshops, we have sweat lodge ceremonies, movie screenings. It's just going to be a full-fledged event. And for those that cannot make it, they could go on powwows.com to be able to look at it live stream. And if you really would like to donate, whether it's $1, $5, I know a lot of people got the income taxes that came in, and you want to do something nice for our family, it's only $300 to have an entire home filtrated with this water filtration system. So you could text LIFE to 91990, and I know that you'll go ahead and promote that on your
absolutely
on everything.
Absolutely. Sister Queen, thank you so much for checking in.
Thank you.
Know we got to bring you back on, because for you to continue to update us about everything that's happening. Sister Queen Ganache Dahar, she is always on the ground, right on the front line. But check it out, family. I'm going to do this. I'm going to put this first annual Water is Life Expo information on my social media. Y'all check it out at Faraji Muhammad. Check it out and listen up with Faraji Muhammad. And make sure y'all follow Queen on social media as well. Queen, we love you. We appreciate it.
Thank you too
for checking in tonight.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Up next, we talk about the latest in the education crisis here in Baltimore City with two of our top young teachers and administrators. So stay tuned for that conversation. We'll be right back.
Welcome to America. I wish I lived in America. Wanna raise KE Ray past and introduce the legends of the future. Special big up to my man Johnny Stevens, who shares his passion with us every day. Wake up, New York.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There is so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh yeah.
That's right. Wake up, everybody. Welcome back to Listen Up here on Listen Up on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. We're just going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to talk to, we have in the studio with us Anthony Pena, who is an administrator for the Baltimore City Public School System. And then we have teacher Shaquia McKenzie, who is a teacher in the system as well. And to talk to us a little bit about what some of the latest things that we've been seeing and hearing as it relates to budget cuts, charter schools, and all stuff relating to education. Oh, yeah, that lady Betsy DeVos as well. So, Shaquia, Anthony, thank you so much for joining me for this update. Anthony, I want to start with you. You have been very vigilant in making sure that, as we talk about on my Sunday show, but making sure that people really understand all of the jargon that is coming out, the propaganda, the all of that, you know, kind of getting straight to the facts. What is the latest? Because I'm still hearing 1,000 layoffs, 1,000 layoffs. I'm still hearing about that. What's happening at this point?
So at this point, Mayor Pugh and Governor's Office have agreed somewhat verbally to give Baltimore City Schools $180 million over the course of 3 years.
Right.
That does not cover this year's budget deficit of $130 million.
Right.
So the question is, how much money will we get this year? And does 1,000 layoffs make it seem 700 layoffs now? And when would that money come through? By March 27th is the final deadline for any budget amendments for this year.
Gotcha.
So right now, we haven't seen nothing in writing yet from the governor's office, nor has Annapolis moved any measures to approve money to Baltimore City Schools.
So right now, this $180 million 3 year period, this is more of a promise to pay.
Exactly. It's almost a credit card, another credit card for Baltimore City Schools.
Right. Now, the conversation about control, financial control, has certainly come up from the governor's administration and as it relates to, you know, making sure that the money is going to be properly allocated, that it is going to be used and whatnot. But you have a little thought about this whole financial control budget. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Absolutely, because those who pay attention in Detroit, it's also happened in Philadelphia, where the governor or mayor will give a financial control board power over the school system. What that would mean would be that any financial expenditures would have to be approved by this control board,
yeah,
who is not from Baltimore, who has been appointed by the governor's office, which means whatever Governor Hogan wants is what will happen in Baltimore City School pretty much it will strap the superintendent and school board of any power, because the control board will have all the final say in decision making.
And this control board will be composed of who exactly?
Whoever the governor decides it to be.
So this is will be his appointment.
His appointments.
All right, Shaquay, I want to bring you in because you worked for a charter school within the city. But, you know, I don't know how many people really understand, like, the impact that this budget and all of this crisis has on charter schools versus your traditional public schools. Can you break that down for us really easy? Because you did a wonderful post on Facebook and about vouchers that I thought was very important for us to bring up. But first, let's talk a little bit about this impact of budget cuts and layoffs on charter schools.
Right. Well, thank you, Faraji, for having me on tonight.
Absolutely.
Well, the impact on charter schools is a bit different and a little bit more significant on the end of the city budget. We have, at my school per se, we get our funding per pupil, correct? And all the other funding comes from foundational support and fundraising. So when you consider a significant slash to a city budget, you have to consider that the schools that are charter schools are barely, you know, getting the equitable funding that public schools get. So they're even more significantly impacted. And the post that I made on Facebook earlier this week pertains to the House Bill 610, which is currently being pushed by our supposed Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, which is essentially calling for this school voucher system, which eliminates the Elementary and Education Act of 1965, which basically ensures an equal opportunity in education. So, you know, in layman's terms, just to not really get into educational jargon, it's somewhat of a proposal to resegregate segregated schools. You know, we've had the Brown versus Board of Education Act that has passed over 65 years ago, and we still are in segregated schools, charter schools, you know, despite many criticisms or whatever debate, you know, some people have against charter schools. They do serve needs in our communities. And so the financial mishap or financial collapses that we see in our educational systems around the nation, including Baltimore, and the acts that are currently being pushed on a federal level really pose significant challenges and really deep concerns to our community.
So when we're talking about per pupil, how much, what is the cost that the city is investing per pupil as of right now, either for your traditional schools or for charter schools?
I don't have the exact figures, but I okay. want to say that it ranges between 9,000 and 10,000 a student.
Okay.
And again, that's just speaking within frame, but it's approximately, I would like to say, about $9,600 per pupil.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wow. And here's the thing, because I know that President Trump just came out as with his budget, of course, that he's adding a hefty $54 billion to the national security side, but then there's word that he's going to cut some of the National Endowment for the Arts. Shaquay, your school is a school that's focused on arts and has some art components to it. Anthony, your school as well. So, Shaquay, starting with you, what type of, should the NEA budget be up for grabs or be on the chopping block as it is, and then what impact will it make?
It absolutely shouldn't be. I think most level-headed educators, researchers, and anyone interested in the general welfare of education knows that art and the presence of arts in our schools is extremely integral to our student success.
Yeah.
It provides alternative opportunities to careers, and it essentially is fundamental to the way students learn, especially students of color. So it's ironic that many times when we're in these budgetary crisis moments, we attack the most integral programs that we have first as a think of, you know, just kind of reasoning and pushing things around. And it's to me, in my opinion as an educator, it's just absolutely ridiculous for us to really, not for us, but for systemic roles, people who are in systemic roles, to really take a charge against these programs when we need them.
Right. Anthony, you work at a school where, unfortunately, violence has plagued that your school and that community. You know, talking about removing arts, I know that arts has been a saving grace for a lot of students, including myself. So when I heard that, I was thinking to myself, he's talking about he doesn't want this urban violence to occur in America, but you break or you cut off the avenue by which, you know, new opportunities can grow from.
Right. And I think that it's deeper than just the arts. He's going to cut after school programming as well as some after school funding for programs like dinners. And so a lot of time after school programs are funded to have dinners to serve those kids who might need a meal, who might not get at home. So it's going to impact the whole child. And yeah. I think it's to cut the budget by 14% proposed next year is going to create a ripple effect across the country. So a lot of urban cities are already struggling. Baltimore are not going to be able to keep up with inflation as well as these cuts are going to take place. And my fear becomes then, as schools start measuring, should we keep these schools open? Are they going to start closing down schools and allowing private companies, just like their private prisons, to take over the school system? And then we're going to have these charter schools and other private schools take over the schools and take more funding out of the government to benefit their own needs versus those who need money in the public school, traditional school system.
And so that's a slippery slope.
Right.
And because if you allow private companies to invest in schools, then they essentially can have a say as to what the curriculum should be.
Right.
And then, you know, them not being educational professionals like a Betsy DeVos, you know what I mean? They just start to kind of experiment without any real understanding or knowledge of how the system works. We gotta pause it right there, but I want to make a note to all of those who are listening tonight that Anthony Pena, Shaquaya McKenzie are two young educators here in the city of Baltimore, highly informed and enlightened about what's going on locally as well as nationally. And I'm just so happy that we have you guys to kind of give us some insight. But, you know, rest assured that we're going to bring you back on as this drama continues to unfold. And hopefully it will change some minds to get people talking a little bit more about what's happening in our educational system. Anthony Pena, Shaquaya McKenzie, thank you so much
for checking in to listen up tonight.
Up next, we have our new segment, For Women, By Women, with Neera Muhammad of I Call Her Queen. So stay tuned for that. And, of course, I got you for the official What's Good in the Hood Street Report. All of that on the other side of Listen Up here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community. We'll be right back.
Before they pass away, oh, yeah. The feelings I wear, don't touch my soul. When it's a rhythm I know, don't touch my crown. They see the vision I've found, don't touch what's there. When it's the feelings I wear, they don't understand what it means to me, but we chose.
Peace and welcome back to Listen Up here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community and, of course, the next generation. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. It is now time for our new segment as we continue to celebrate great women here for Women's History Month. And we're going to have our new segment, For Women, by fellow radio show host. She is a member of the Ladies of Listen Up and is the CEO and founder of I Call Her Queen, LLC. We're welcome back again for another installment of For Women, By Women with Neera Muhammad. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me. So on this week's edition of For Women, By Women, we will be traveling back to the 1850s to take a look at one of our greatest heroines, Harriet Tubman. Now, I know you guys are probably wondering, Harriet Tubman, where did she pull that from? Out of a hat? No, I've been following WGN's show called The Underground. And if any of you have not had a chance to check out The Underground, please check it out. It is an amazing show. But to get back to the For Women, By Women segment for this evening, I really wanted to touch on how as we as women have to get more in tune with being our own heroine. So often we're always talking about, oh, I don't have any help, or, you know, I look up to this person or I look up to that person. I want women to take a moment to step back and say, you know what? Today, I'm my own heroine. Today, I'm going to slay my own dragon. Today, I'm going to pursue my own dreams. Today, I'm going to get one foot out of the bed. And hey, that may be all the success that I needed for that day, but that's okay. So back to my girl, Harriet Tubman. I was really inspired by her because, of course, we know that she freed slaves and that's what she's known for. But I thought it was really cool that one, Harriet Tubman was born here on Maryland's Eastern Shore.
Yes.
So I was like, that's what's up. She was born here. So, you know, her blood was already thick because she's from Maryland. You know what I mean? Maybe not Baltimore, but close enough. She fled slavery in 1849, leaving behind her husband and children. Her husband, who at the time was a free man, but she did return to the South at least 19 times.
Wow.
To free slaves. Wow. 19 times. She served as a scout, a spy, and a nurse during the Civil War. For many years, she nursed wounded soldiers. That was all she did. Mm. And she took care of herself by baking gingerbread and selling root beer. That's how she supported herself during that time. Even though she was she did a lot for the Union, they didn't pay her very much. I mean, over a course of 2 years, she only made $200. Mm. So she had to support herself. So I love that about her, that she was such a go-getter and that she really, you know, first of all, her bounty, the highest bounty for her head was $40,000.
Mm.
That's a lot of money back then. Mm. So she was very notorious. She definitely was one of the top people for the Underground Railroad, which we already knew. But I think that's amazing that she was so influential, that a woman could be so influential and such a big part of our history here in America. So as you all know, she's referred to as Moses because she led the people to freedom.
Mm.
So absolutely. For many of us, I don't know how many of you think of the black man and woman as a modern day Israelite, but some look at her story as a prime example of how the black man and woman is a modern day Israelite, because they called her Moses back then. And I just love that Moses this time was a woman. Boom. So there were a couple of quotes that I felt like were really, really strong from Harriet that I wanted to touch on. Number one being, she said, never wound a snake, kill it.
Mm.
Never wound a snake.
Can we say that one more time? I love it. Love it.
I was like, this little short lady was fiery. I'm telling you. And then something else that she said that really stuck out to me was, I started with this idea in my head. There's two things I've got a right to, death or liberty.
Mm.
I want everyone to take a look at the fact that history, slavery was not that many years ago. We think of it like, oh my gosh, that had to be like 200, 300 years ago. No, slavery is right in our back door.
Mm.
We're still dealing with so many of those same issues that we dealt with during slavery. So to read some of her words and hear her say that she's got a right to two things, death or liberty, how relevant is that still to our black community today?
Mm.
How relevant is that to the poor communities of the world today? Not just the black community, but the poor communities of the world. Because in a lot of cases, it's not about color, it's about wealth. And so we're a lot